Welcome to Out of the Ordinary, the show that helps you grow a daily life that matters. I'm Christy Purifoy.
And I'm Lisa Jo Baker. And if you've ever wondered what Christy has in common with Madeline L'Engle, this is the conversation for you.
Totally blushing here and feeling very unworthy of that comparison, but also so excited for this conversation because I would love to see this idea spread into other lives and other communities. So get comfy, friends.
Here we go. So one of the things I'm learning about our friendship that's a lot of fun is when we get to invite new people into the friendship. So we had Emily on the podcast, and it was so fun to have her, and it's fun to have her in our lives. And it's always fun to have a fresh voice, too, when you've had a long relationship, because they tend to call out or maybe ask questions you don't think to even ask.
True.
And we had a moment like that a couple weeks ago. I was at Christy's and we had another friend with us there too. And Christy was sharing some of the work she's busy with. And then that friend ended up asking a lot of questions about that work that I realized, I guess I haven't asked those. I just sometimes accept that there's something, Christy, you're gonna laugh at this, that there's something mysterious about Christy's life, because Christy is to me, as I've said many times, she is like Madeline L'Engle, I think of her as, or as Tasha Tudor. So when she does sort of magical things like in her garden, her kitchen, or her writing life, I accept those. They're like a baseline to me, and I don't often like ask additional questions. It's weird. I didn't realize that until we had this experience where our friend Anne asked Christy some follow-ups about her current writing life. And I thought to myself, why haven't I asked more? Like, why have I just accepted that? And I realized it's because it's Christy, duh. Like, what do you mean?
Oh, that makes me laugh. I did not. You told me you knew how to launch into this conversation, and I just trusted you and said, I'll follow your lead, Lisa Jo. And I did not expect that. Tasha Tudor, Madeline L'Engle, but I am here for it. Let's talk about this. I love it. No, and honestly, like, for myself, I will say that sometimes I don't talk about things because I don't realize fully how good they are, unique they are, right? We're just living our lives. We're dealing with ordinary stressors. We're meeting our deadlines, whatever. And sometimes we need a friend to help us step back and see that bigger picture and say, oh, yeah, this is good. Maybe I should share this with others. Maybe there's something in here for other people too. So thank you for wanting to do that with me. And I'm excited to do that together today for our listeners.
Well, I think we have to go back to the very beginning. When Christy and I first met, she was a student at the University of Chicago getting her PhD in English literature. And there's some obscure part of English literature that I don't remember. What part of it was it?
British and Irish modernism, especially literature between the world wars. Yes.
There you go. Exactly. As one does. And I was getting my law degree. We were students in graduate school. I guess I wasn't getting my law degree. I already had it, didn't I?
Oh, right.
I was finished. I was working as a baby lawyer. And actually then over the years of our friendship, Christy graduated and became a baby professor, and she was teaching English. And so I share that to say maybe part of why I didn't ask questions is that that has actually always been the framework I've had you in as somebody who is an interpreter of literature for other people. And because you're a person of faith, you wrap faith into those conversations. And not only were you formally trained to do that, over the course of our entire friendship, that is what you have done for me. Mm-hmm. And if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you know I've often talked about how Christy reminds me of my mom. So I have that built in as well, that I am used to Christy interpreting the literary world around me. Or maybe it's better to say, I'm used to Christy interpreting the world around me through literature and faith. Mm-hmm. And so that's the beginning. That's the baseline. And maybe part of why I didn't ask questions about the work you're doing now. But what I am recognizing, since our friend Anne called out the uniqueness of this role you have, is, and this is my favorite part, how much it harkens back full circle to your initial study and qualification, where you weren't ever sure, is this, what am I doing with this degree? You were looking for academic jobs. You spent a short time in academia. But I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast for a long time knows that you used to say, I traded my desk for I traded the classroom for...
Right, for a farmhouse and an old farmhouse and a writing desk or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
And yet, God is always picking up the dropped threads of our stories, is what I believe. And over 20 years of knowing you, we've talked about a lot. And so this is a really sweet moment to feel like, my goodness, even Christy and I hadn't really paid attention to that in a way that sometimes another friend will. This is a long setup for this conversation, but it is relevant backstory.
Right. Because in the fall, so here we are in the spring, back in the fall, I started a new role at my church as officially writer in residence, which means that, it means many things, which we will unpack today. But one of the things it means for me is for the first time in all these years of our friendship, Lisa Jo, I have, for some of my writing at least, a sort of institutional affiliation, a kind of institutional support. I am paid a stipend for my work as writer in residence. And I am writing for a very particular community, interpreting the world for a very particular community of which I am a part. Which is what I, in a way, I would have done as an academic. You know, I would have found my academic community and I would have been rooted within it and I would have been writing for that community and for the community of which I was a part, interpreting literature, interpreting the world through the lens of the books we were reading. So in a way, you're right. I'm doing that now, but I'm doing it for, the institution that is my local church. I'm doing it for my church community. And the stories that are the lens for almost everything I'm writing for them are the stories of scripture, the stories of our shared worship, the stories of, you know, the sacred year that, you know, forms our, the structure of our worship and our church. So, thanks for helping me even to see. I hadn't quite appreciated what a full circle it is. And it is so satisfying, Lisa Jo. I am so happy. I love it so much. I love it so much. And it's going to be so fun to unpack all the reasons why. Because I've realized, and this is why we haven't talked about this yet, even though I've been at it for months, and I haven't shared about it much online, because I just didn't realize how relevant it was for those beyond me. I thought it was, I knew it mattered to me, and it really... It really wasn't until our friend, we were together with her here at Maplehurst, and she started asking, and also the fact that she immediately, I still remember when we mentioned it and the way her face lit up and her eyes got big. Yeah. And she got it. Like, she was like, oh, wow. And I realized, oh, this isn't just an oh, wow for me. This is, there are others who get this and maybe need to hear about it. And could maybe even start similar things in their own communities, their own institutions of belonging. So, I'm excited to answer your questions, Lisa Jo, and just say more about it today. So, writer in residence at my church.
We have to pause there just for a minute, though, because the movie geek in me, who feels like it's one of those terms that exists in, like, what's her name? What was her name from You've Got Mail? Kathleen Kelly world. A writer in residence. It feels right. So like rom-com almost, you know. It's just so, it's like magical. Like, who's a writer? And maybe C.S. Lewis or Tolkien, or it feels very otherworldly. It feels almost like an ancient title, like something that's been around a long time. And it's why I think my brain filed it under Madeleine L'Engle, Tasha Tudor. It does feel like those people would have done. And so in my world, because I have a Christie in my life, it seems normal. And what I realized is when Anne was talking about it to you, I was like, oh, she doesn't operate in this plane. She doesn't have like an ongoing magical friend in the book world the way I feel like I do with Christie. And so when she started to ask questions, I too then became really interested in just learning, what does that mean? How do you become that? And, I mean, I feel like I have practical questions like, do you get paid for it? How much work is required? Do you have office hours? Like, I think there are a lot of practical things that never even occurred to me to talk to you about. But as we found, not just Anne had questions.
Yeah, well, let me just dive in and then you can cut in at any time, or you can remind me of the questions I forget to answer, because that will happen. But yeah, let me just say a little bit of what it looks like for me. So I will preface this by saying, I had a slight bit of context for it, but it was a context that was super intimidating, because in fact, I knew that Madeline L'Engle, our beloved Madeline, author of A Wrinkle in Time and the Crosswicks journals and so many, and poetry and so many books that we love. She had served as, for many years, as writer in residence at...
Oh my word, I didn't know that. And it just proves that I am right. Oh my gosh.
She was writer in residence for her church, the Cathedral Church, St. John the Divine in New York City. She served there as well as cathedral librarian. And she wrote about how really that came about because she needed space to work. And so she could work in the library and write. But she served as writer in residence. And I have to guess that some of her more sort of nonfiction theological musings, her writing, like in, The Irrational Season, her kind of reflections on the church year, they were clearly rooted in her faith and in her church tradition, but I think also in this role that she held as writer in residence. So I had that context for it. But of course, that is super intimidating because I am, despite your lovely belief in me, Lisa Jo, and your love for me, let's just be honest here. I'm not Madeline L'Engle.
I mean, false. There's a Madeline L'Engle in every generation and you are ours. So just deal with it.
Oh, well, you know, so that was intimidating for me. And actually, it was, for a while, it was confusing because I thought, well, Madeline L'Engle, she wrote poetry, she wrote fiction, she wrote nonfiction. I stick with nonfiction. And so I knew I can't just start writing like Madeline L'Engle or tackling everything she did. Obviously, I have to do it my own way. So what will it look like for me? And when I began, I had excitement, I had a context, but I had a lot of questions as well. So it isn't as if I dove into this knowing exactly what it would look like or exactly what I would do. But I'll say it had been the idea of we have a new rector for our church. We're an Episcopal church in the Anglican Communion. And so if you have any familiarity with Episcopal or Anglican churches here in the U.S. or all around the world, Anglicanism is a global church tradition, then that's the particular context in which I have been worshiping for a number of years. And we have a new rector at our church. And it was his idea. He is himself a writer. He loves the arts. His wife is a musician. He's an excellent writer. He loves to read. And so when he came to our church, and I'll just say as well, I'm not the only writer in our church. We have a number of other artists, writers, theologians in our church. But one thing that he did early in his time as rector is he invited another church member who is a professor and a theologian. He invited him to serve as theologian in residence. So that man is our theologian in residence. He often teaches special classes for us. It's a lot of fun. Sometimes, even when he's not teaching, if we have a sort of Christian formation class or what some people call a Sunday school class, and a theological question comes up, our rector will often say, well, he often deflects to our theologian in residence, and it's lovely to hear from him. So he set that up, and he invited me to serve as writer in residence. So I will say that it was not my idea. I would have never thought to ask or thought of this.
Wait, can I share that? I need more details. How did he ask you? Was it like after church one day? Did he write you an email? Was it like a formal scroll? Like,
you know, it
how was your reaction?
Yeah, for a while it was an informal conversation. It was an idea he threw out, and I thought, oh, that's intriguing and also sort of terrifying. And I do what I often do, which is I think, well, I'll talk to him about it, but maybe nothing will come of it. That's how I handle new scary things, is think, well, we can talk, but it's not going to happen. I don't have to worry about it yet. You know, so for quite a few months, it was just an informal question. And then actually, curiously enough, when he did kind of formally ask me, it was exactly, Lisa Jo, when you and I had just decided that we needed to put a pause on the podcast and that I knew I was being invited by God to set down a number of commitments in order to have a period with some more rest and spaciousness. So we've talked about that on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So interestingly, he asked me exactly, I think it might have been the day after that you and I had decided that. And I was in the process even then of sending out some emails and figuring out how to kind of set some things down. So I knew when he asked me, okay, I'm very excited about this. This feels like a yes for me, but also it seems very clear that I can't say yes yet because everything in my life has been God saying, Christy, you need to start saying no. So I told him yes, but not yet. And so I think that was in the summer or late spring, early summer. And I didn't officially begin until November. Yeah, so it's interesting to think of the timing of that. Yeah.
Mm. So when you said yes, was it like accepting a job contract? Like, was he like, here is going to be your hours. You need to submit one article a week. You have to, it sounds so poetic, writer in residence. What were the, like, did you ask him, what are the terms? What am I committing to? I'm so curious. What does that look like? None of us have any frame of reference for this.
Right. Good question. So yes, I can tell you what it looked like for me. And I can also say what I've just remembered, I think is important to mention as well, is that, especially for those out there listening who think, oh, was this something for my church, or I'm a writer, or I'm an artist? What is there something like this for me? I just want to emphasize that he had the idea and he asked, and I would never in 10 million years have thought myself of serving my church in this way. So I just feel like that's important to say, is that there may be people listening who now will have the idea, but if you have writers in your church or artists in your church and you think, gosh, it'd be so great if they were using their gifts more, you know, on behalf of our community, don't suppose for a moment that they've had that idea themselves and they're not interested, because really this would not be happening if the idea hadn't been laid before me, and if this, my pastor had not made the request and sort of set the idea before me. So, so I said yes. And I think how we do it at my church is that it isn't an hourly position. It isn't a salaried position. It isn't that category. It is, it's a stipend. So I receive a small monthly stipend. I'll say small, but significant. It's not nominal. It allows me financially to set aside the time and to do the work. But because it's a stipend and it's not project based or hourly based, there's a lot of flexibility, which, is a real gift to me, because it means that as other parts of my life need to take precedence for a time, there's a great deal of flexibility in how much time I give to this week by week. There are seasons where I'm giving a lot more time. So for instance, in past couple months, many writers in our church worked together to create a book, printed book of daily devotions for Lent. And I wrote many of those as the writer in residence. And so that was a season where I was spending many more hours than, for instance, I am this week. So it just, depending on what we're working on, it can vary. That is just a good fit for me as a mom, as someone who has other writing commitments. It just means that I can, there's kind of an ease in what I can offer and when. So I appreciate that. It's not a set hours. And he was very clear when he made the offer that, hey, we're going to figure this out together. So, you start figuring it out. And that was, I think, a really important part of it as well, because I think it's just like, writers will understand this. You don't find your writing voice without writing. You have to write to find it. So I think in the same way, when I first started as writer in residence, I didn't know what will I write. And I did have a few weeks there where I'm trying things and thinking, gosh, what kind of thing do I offer? Is it like this that I've offered other audiences in the past? Is it more like this? And I didn't know. But over time, as I have been writing, I have come to understand, oh, I think it looks like this. Oh, I think this is something unique I can offer. But I couldn't have figured that out without just doing the thing. So I am grateful that he and my church gave me space to figure it out by just doing the thing. And what I have realized that I am doing, at least in part, is I as you said in the beginning, I am interpreting. So I am a member of this church. I am worshiping alongside these other people who will be reading my words. And so we're experiencing many things together, whether it's the season of the church year or a particular concern in our church or issue or topic that came up in a sermon or event we all experienced together. That is the world we're sharing. And I can take the various dots of our experience and weave them into a story that I that is helping me make sense of our community and our shared faith. And then I hope offers them that. And so I have already had that experience a few times where people in my church have come and have said, oh my goodness, thank you for writing about that. You put words to something I have felt. Hmm. And then they've offered me their story of like, this is when I felt it. And it has helped me get to know people. It is, it has, oh, you know, Lisa Jo, what it has primarily done is it has given me an invitation and an opportunity to write things that would not exist otherwise, that are coming out of deep loves of mine, things I love to learn about or research that before had nowhere to go, no place. So they would not have existed. But now they do. Now these things are out there because my church, you know, invited me to write on their behalf. So it's that part of it feels just really such a blessing and really important. And
I ask why? Because you have other forums, like you write a newsletter, you write for online stuff, you write for magazines. Why is it so different, this kind of writing, in that it wouldn't exist except that you're doing it in this church context?
Yeah. It's a kind of nuanced, complicated answer. Part of it is that the writing I have done lately for books, for publishers, let's say that, is in this gardening vein, right? So I've been writing these gardening gift books. I've been writing about gardening for a long time now. And so the audience, so I whether I'm writing on my newsletter or I'm writing for social media, I keep that book audience in mind. But that book audience doesn't completely overlap. It overlaps somewhat, but it isn't the same audience that is my church. So there are just things I love about the Anglican tradition, for instance, things I'm really curious about, in the Bible, things I love about our ways of worshiping, experiences we've had in the church. So, for instance, we recently in our church had confirmation, and so our bishop was going to come and perform that rite. And it caused me to remember all these previous visits by our bishop and all these really delightful stories about him because he's such a delightful man. And I knew that there were people in our church who maybe are new or haven't known the bishop as long as I have. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is my chance to like tell these stories, to paint a picture of this faithful shepherd. So that now it's in writing and others can receive these stories that I have lived. As well, I'm connecting stories even for those in the church who also experience them, but I'm sort of, you know, weaving them together into a portrait. So that would just be an example of the kind of thing that, like, you know, I'm not going to put that in a
it's like
newsletter.
A family, this is more like a family newsletter. It's a really helpful way to think about it. So does that mean that these things you're writing are not available online to the general public?
So it does mean that. But here and there, I think I'm figuring out, I am writing always knowing that this may not be the first sharing of these things isn't necessarily the final sharing. So for instance, my rector is always saying to me, you know, how much he appreciates what I'm writing and that he just wants to keep in mind, what does it look like to offer these in a different format? Are these going to be collected at some point or printed or published? You know, we don't know and we don't need to figure that out yet. But I know it's on his mind and it's on mine that, you know, that these could have some kind of future. You know, perhaps they're edited or they're selected and they're offered in some way. I have thought about other ways of sharing, but I feel like kind of like I had to write myself into this role. I've sort of let myself decide, you know, I'm not sure how else to share them yet. So I just will wait and see, you know, what feels right down the road.
Podcast listeners, there's nowhere for them to go click a link, right?
Exactly.
I know they're wondering.
Yeah, they, you know, I tend to write, I'll write something for our church's weekly emails. I will write for our printed Sunday bulletin. I will write for, we have a quarterly magazine that is printed and mailed out, but these things are going to the church community and they're not housed, you know, online. Right. But I will share, I did just share, I wrote a reflection recently for Palm Sunday, that I thought, you know, this is good for a general audience. And I just really liked it. So I shared it with my, I shared it with my email subscribers.
Nice.
So you never know. You never know.
Oh, that's so great. I'm curious then what your rhythms have looked like. Do you find you write at home? Do you find you're ever actually in the church building to do any of the writer in residence?
So I write at home, but actually a really fun part of it is that I occasionally make the drive out to my church for meetings with other church staff when, for instance, we're brainstorming for the next seasonal magazine. And so that means I'm sitting there with our creative director. I'm sitting with the music director, the children's director, the youth minister, and others, and together with them, brainstorming the stories that are important to share and the themes that are emerging from them. And so that is something else that is super fun. It's collaborative. Yeah. A few times I collaborated with our music director and with our, we have, actually, I think we maybe call him our photographer in residence. He's a photographer and a filmmaker. And so he does all the sort of visuals for our church. And I collaborated with those two men for some short films that introduced new liturgical seasons. So like we made one for Advent and Christmas and Epiphany. And so it was I sort of wrote the script and then the one wrote the music and the other, you know, filmed the images for these short little films that we played at the beginning of some of our services. So that collaborative aspect is so fun. And when else would I ever collaborate, so you know, fun. In that way? And I will say as well, as just personally, I've been in church my whole life. And have had wonderful experiences, and like any other, you know, Christian involved in, you know, human community with other humans, not great experiences. But I just always assumed that my sort of true self and my real gifts would never be of use within the church. So I just took it for granted that I would serve in like the nursery and children's ministry when my kids were young and always feel really awkward and inadequate, which I always did because I'm not good with kids despite having four of them. Or that I would serve in other ways that I would be willing to serve, but would not touch like my deepest self and my deepest interests. So to be given this opportunity to serve in ways that actually use like the things I care about most and the things I feel like the most passionate about and the most like gifted in is something I never expected and is such a gift. And it's just, I just feel sort of alive within my church community, fully alive within my church community in a way that I just haven't experienced before.
It's so amazing because it's just a unique classroom and unique students. It's so
right.
It's truly amazing to me that God would bring all of those gifts full circle, but in a completely different context now.
Yeah.
I guess as we start to wrap up the conversation, one of the things I'm wondering is something you said near the beginning that you wouldn't have thought to ask or offer. Mm-hmm. What do you say to listeners who are listening to this and either have their own giftings, whether they're artists or photographers or writers, or it's a church staff listening, thinking, oh gosh, we've got someone like that in our congregation. Like, what do you recommend? I think it'd be fun to just sort of hear your thoughts about navigating maybe mm-hmm. moving into a space like this?
Yeah, maybe I'll begin by saying, you know, one not so small reason why this matters is that, you know, God has given, you know, some of his faithful followers gifts in these areas, whether it's writing, art, other creative endeavors. And yet these are things that our world and our economy struggles to support. So we all know this. Well, like it's why we have this, this idea of a starving artist, right? Because we know that those who have these gifts can struggle to make a living doing them. And I just think what an opportunity for churches to say, oh my goodness, these things matter. And in small ways or large, depending on our resources, we can make space for God's people to use these gifts, you know, just as we read in the Old Testament, you know, God gave such detailed instructions for his temple and said, okay, this is what the weavers are going to do. And this is what the carvers are going to do. And this is, you know, he wanted all these artisans, you know, creating that worship space for him. And so what would that look like for our churches today is stepping into a gap that just our kind of general culture and economic systems have left, so that the best of us, or the creative among us, aren't necessarily able to use those gifts in a professional setting outside of the church. So why not make space for them to use them within the church? But I would say as well that these can be hard conversations to have. So I just expect that there are people listening who think, oh my gosh, my own church would never, or even pastors who might be thinking, oh, I would love to do this, but I don't know if my congregation would embrace the arts. I mean, these are tough. I mean, this is not easy stuff for every community. But, I just say, you know, go slow, tiptoe in, try small things, you know, start the conversation and think of it as a conversation. So, you know, if there's an artist listening who wants to bring this up in their church community, do it, but think about approach it like starting a conversation rather than setting out some demands or making requests. And then to be creative and flexible, it's going to look different, depending on the church. My church it's not a huge church. It's definitely not a mega church or a very wealthy church, but it's a somewhat larger church than average. So there are resources for this. But I think even a smaller church, maybe with less financial resources, could get creative in making space for the creators in their congregation to use their gifts. And then I think just to remember that it is God who gives these gifts. And I feel like there can be some concern that these things might feel, you know, artists, they're so creative. They're a little bit on the edges maybe of our communities, and what will happen if we, you know, give them some opportunities to share more publicly. I think for those of us who want to keep a tighter control, you know, on things generally, that could be stretching for us. Because, you know, you never know what that painter might paint or that writer might write. And I'll just say for myself, I feel that as well. I often feel nervous, like, oh no, what if I take very seriously that many in the church will read what I write. And part of me wants to have every word vetted and demand that, you know, multiple staff check everything I share. But I think I've just decided that I'm grateful for the space I've been given to do this, and that there's just going to be grace, you know, if this is what God is desiring to happen, there's going to be grace for the pastors and grace for the writers, to sometimes make mistakes, but in the working out of it, to also to create much that is really beautiful and meaningful and encouraging for God's church. So I think I just say, you know, start the conversation. And sometimes all it takes is knowing, well, there are other churches doing this. So maybe there's something in this for us too.
It's so encouraging. I love this story. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that it's encouraging and inspiring to people listening that there are curious and creative ways to connect your gifts with what God is doing in your home base. And I think it's so countercultural, Christy, that you're doing this in a church that isn't promising platform and shares mm-hmm. and nobody mm-hmm. can read it except the church. And
yeah.
it's hidden in all yeah. the best ways that God's word has been. And I just find that so encouraging that you have found such fulfillment mm-hmm. in sort of a quiet, hidden practice when we live in a culture that says essentially like, Pixar, it didn't happen. So
right.
I'm grateful for that. I think it'll be fun next week. We'll have another conversation about some of the hidden work that I've been doing that circles back to my roots too. And it's been surprising to both of us. Like yours was a surprise to you and mine has been a surprise to me. So I hope you come back next week, friends, because we have got some more of this to share.
Until next week.